Welcome back to the London Futurist podcast. Our guest in this episode is Lou Dekar, Programme Director at the Foresight Institute. I recently saw Lou give a marvellous talk at the Transvision Conference in Utrecht in the Netherlands on the subject of AGI alignment, challenges and hope. Lou has kindly agreed to join us to review some of the ideas in that talk and to explore their consequences. Lou, welcome to the London Futurists podcast.
Thank you for the high praise, David, and thank you for the invitation today.
Thank you for joining us, Lou.
Thank you, Callum. Nice to meet you.
Lou, to set the scene, what should our audience know about you?
Okay, so for the context of the topic of today, you said that I am program director at Foresight Institute. It's been 7 years now that I have been working on accelerating and exploring the potential of futuristic technologies to bring forth desirable futures for humanity. My background is actually political science and economics. I'm a researcher in that field. But it is a fascination with AI. When I understood its potential implications back in 2015, that brought me to Foresight. And it's been quite a thrilling adventure since then.
What happened in 2015 to lead you to be fascinated by AI?
Actually, I read Tim Urban's post on Wait But Why, The Road to Superintelligence. It is like a popular science post, but it entirely blew my mind and led me into a very deep rabbit hole about artificial general intelligence and superintelligence.
So sometimes articles do change the trajectory of people's lives.
Certainly.
I've seen some images from that blog post reappear recently. People keep picking some of the images and say, it was predicted in 2015 and it seems to be coming true.
There is a lot of the argument that is still extremely relevant, even though there have been recent very fast progress. The field is constantly changing. Actually, it's sometimes changing so fast that it's hard to stay up to date. And yet, I find that most of the images, the memes, the strong points of the article are still so well articulated and explained that I would still recommend it as an entry reading for the field.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes. Just a bit more about the Foresight Institute, which has been around for, I think, 38 years, originally founded by nanotechnology pioneers Eric Drexler, Christine Pettersson, and others.
That's right.
Is Foresight still focused on nanotechnology, or does AI have a much larger part of its role these days?
Both of those, really. AI was already part of Foresight back in 1986. I think it ties into Foresight being a really fascinating organization built on this vision from Eric Drexler when he published Engines of Creation, but also born in this context of this ecosystem composed of extropians, cypherpunks, and all these people who were really bent on accelerating transformative futures for humanity using edge technology.
So let's come to the subject of AGI alignment, which you spoke about in Utrecht. For some of our listeners who are unsure what the concept of AGI alignment means, how would you explain it and why is it important?
Very important question. And to share a disclaimer, I think the answer would definitely be a topic to debate. I think there are several ways to approach it. Recently, I was reading this paper by researchers from Beijing University called AI Alignment, a Comprehensive Survey. They give a definition of alignment that is very straightforward. It's making AI systems behave in line with human interests and values. Of course, some people could disagree that alignment is possible or meaningful to talk about. Some people have argued in that direction. Personally, I'd like to think of alignment as a scenario where we develop AI in a way where humans remain the authors of their own story, at least as much as they are today, or perhaps even more. Like, let's say if we are powered by AI, that humanity could have even more power, more agency, but not less. The reason why alignment is important is to take it back to the basics. We are this amazing, weird species living on this planet. This is actually an idea from a very dear friend called Yosha Bach, who is a very famous researcher in artificial intelligence and philosopher. And he said in a recent talk at CCC that in a few generations, we've created this civilization that is largely free from hunger, from predation, where we can live with health, die with dignity, and that this is a very unusual way to live for conscious beings on this planet, if you think about it. And that now we are at this wild point where we are teaching inanimate matter how to think. And we have this opportunity to build the next level system, one that could help us defeat entropy at scale, like going back to the old Extropian dream and the birth of Foresight Institute. We could build a system that could achieve full coherence across the planet, that help us solve our oldest and also more recent challenges. If we are lucky, it could even take us to exploring the universe far, far beyond our current comprehension of it. However, all these wonders, if we are not so lucky and if we mess it up, could have extremely dire consequences. One of them being the straight up extinction of humanity, which would be quite unfortunate. Now, there is, to me, no debate, or at least I generally do not debate whether or not we should develop AI, because I believe that this will happen eventually, even if we manage to slow it. So we better be prepared, basically, and try to indeed find a way to coexist with AI, because humanity depends on it.
Your presentation, Lou, shows that you're extremely alert to all the possible downsides. And as you say, there are staggering possible upsides to superintelligence. David and I slightly disagree on this. My hunch is that it's not possible to align a superintelligence to humanity. I don't see how you can guarantee that forever and a day, a superintelligence which is potentially millions of times smarter than us will do more or less what we want it to do, even if we knew what we wanted it to do, which we don't. I disagree with myself about my own goals, and there's 8 billion of us to disagree. So it seems to me to be an utterly implausible project. And what we really are doing is moving into a new world where we're going to rely on another species to look kindly on us. And actually, I'm reasonably optimistic. I think it probably will. Is your hunch less bleak than that? Is your hunch that AGI and superintelligence alignment is achievable? I do like your phrase, it would be quite unfortunate if we went extinct. There must be some English in you.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
It is.
Okay, how to put it? I don't know if it is that bleak, but I do think there are a lot of people who would agree with you, and that there are very good reasons to think that it seems quite ambitious project to align something that is much, much smarter than us. I feel like I do not have the capacity to evaluate exactly and to make a deeply informed answer about this, but my hunch would be in your direction. Intuitively, it seems very difficult to align something that is much, much more intelligent than us.
Yeah. I don't think that's a counsel of despair, because, as we say, the positive upsides of superintelligence for humanity are staggering. And also, there is still work for us to do. I think that our biggest risk that we can do anything about is avoiding panic. And I think we're heading towards panic, because not enough people are paying attention to the extraordinary developments in AI and thinking carefully about where that's going. So they're going to be surprised over and over again by remarkable developments in AI. And very often they're going to dislike that surprise. Whereas if more people were thinking carefully and deeply and reading Waitbot Why and all the other good materials that are available, the surprises might not be so destabilizing. So I think that's our biggest job, actually, is to get as many people as possible to think carefully about it so we don't mess it up by panicking.
Yeah, it's a really good question, actually. There has been reactions when some information about AI has been entering the collective consciousness, like some protest. I think the Pope has made a statement on the topic, maybe about slowing it down. And at the same time, we've also had some cautionary tales about humanity being sometimes a bit apathetic when it comes to existential risk. I'm thinking about this movie, Don't Look Up. Maybe you've seen it.
Yeah.
Until the very end, the characters are not quite realizing that there is an issue. So I think it's hard. I do not have a prediction for how it will pan out on a collective consciousness level, but I certainly agree that it's important to not panic, to hold on to hope, and to look soberly at the situation as much as possible.
So let's try a couple of ideas as to how we might maintain alignment with something that's much more intelligent than us. One of the ideas is we humans will be much smarter in any case. It won't be today's 2020s humans trying to align a vastly more powerful superintelligence, but in the vision of people like Ray Kurzweil, we ourselves will be that superintelligence. We will have our brains hugely expanded in the process. Where do you put that on the spectrum of plausibility?
I always try to really stay away from making predictions. So I really don't want to talk about plausibility. I do want to say that that scenario is one of my favorites and one that I hope for, certainly. I find the idea of expanding our intelligence and new layers of our cortex being implemented on human beings very seductive, personally. I'm sure a lot of people would disagree with that.
One of the counterviews is that it will be possible, but we probably won't be able to develop our brains as quickly as AIs can develop their own brains. It takes a long time to add a few more neurons to our brains, whereas you can just add huge more CPUs, GPUs, other kinds of processing to these systems, and they become 10 times more capable in a short while.
Right.
Yeah. I think you're cheating, David. I don't think that's alignment. That's the successful outcome which the superintelligence connives in or allows to happen, because we're going to need superintelligence to be able to expand ourselves sufficiently to catch up with it. Essentially, you're talking about mind uploading, which is a formidably challenging project, and we're going to need superintelligence to make that possible. So that's not really alignment. That's the successful outcome as facilitated by the superintelligence. On Kurzweil, we raised Kurzweil. Isn't it amazing that Kurzweil has been predicting the same thing forever and ever? 2029, superintelligence arrives, and then we have 16 years, which is a slightly long time, but after those 16 years, we then upload and get the singularity where we all become superintelligences. And for many years, Kurzweil has been, I'd say, shunned by most people around the world. Even people who like his ideas have been slightly wary about being vocal in his support. And it's just increasingly looking like he might be right, which would be incredible if back in the 80s he came up with these dates and they turned out to be right.
Well, he will be able to say, I told you so.
And then some.
And then some. But to come back to your point about neurotech, I feel like there are several ways that we can think about this. There is, of course, intelligence augmentations that can be achieved via genetic engineering that could be done in adults. And people talk about augmenting IQ from 30 points, which is probably not on par with a theoretical superintelligence at all in terms of orders of magnitude. However, there's not just mind uploading. In approaches that I think are interesting, there's lo-fi uploading, trying to create low-resolution models of human brains. There is also the BCI approach, plugging our brains into a computer. So thinking about the point that you brought, which is for us, our biological brain is too slow. It's too slow to add a neuron. That is true. The idea of being able to plug into a computer that then would be much faster is really interesting. However, there is no technology that does that for now, in a way where we know that that connection between the biobrain and the theoretical computer brain could work. But it's still a very beautiful and interesting idea to explore. Personally, very excited about it.
So I confess I am with both of you there. I do think that the possibility of humans having significantly more powerful minds does depend upon AI helping us. So that can't be the core solution to AI alignment. But what about using AI to help align AI? That sounds daft, but if you have a simple, well-understood AI, then it might control what the more general, less understood AI does. And I think this is what is happening in one of the recently released models from the company Anthropic. They talk about having a constitution layer inside their Claude large language model. And that sort of sits on top of the output. I'm not sure I fully understand it. And it's meant to stop the large language model doing things which should be in violation of human values. More generally, are you interested in the possibility that AI might help us tame AI?
An idea that keeps popping in my mind, even through this conversation, is this idea that we are in a process where several simultaneous profound technological revolutions are happening. It is actually an old idea of Forsyth Institute, and it's the idea that these transformative emerging technologies can synergize, accelerate each other, and that it is really important for that reason to work in a transdisciplinary way in those innovative fields. And that is what we do at Forsyth. I was thinking about it precisely in the context of neurotech. Maybe we can ourselves become like slightly more intelligent in a short time frame, which will help us build a safer technology, maybe for a few years until we manage to build an AI that is safe enough that then we have enough intelligence to think about this in a better way. So this idea of differential technology development, the idea that we can strategically choose to develop certain technologies before some others, and the idea that there can be synergies and that being strategic and thoughtful about the way we approach these developments could help us down the line is one that I want to mention. But to get specifically to Claude, which is the AI developed by Anthropic that they call this constitutional AI, that's also an approach explored by OpenAI, by the way. So they do train, indeed, the AI on human ethical principles. They say that the texts that they use are the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. I believe they also use some AI principles from the major AI labs like DeepMind. And they are trying to mitigate around a bunch of bias. They use both human reinforcement and AI reinforcement to train the AIs to see whether they have been indeed abiding by those principles. I think it's definitely an approach worth exploring. I think it's important to explore a variety of approach and that we try everything we can and that we try new ideas. Of course, there are a lot of possible challenges with this approach, which is choosing what principles to choose in the first place, a really important question of legitimacy. The people at Anthropic put it very clearly on their website. They all have the best intentions. But of course, a lot of people could object that everyone is biased. There is also this question of who chooses, is it democratic? Are the main AI labs the one that should be choosing these principles? Another possible challenge is aligning so many entities, aligning so many humans. This is an idea from Roman Yampolsky, who is pointing out this difficulty in achieving alignment among so many diverse human values. There are nearly 8 billion people on the planet with conflicting preferences, moral viewpoints. How are we going to choose something that is aligned with all of those? And then he adds, imagine that we also have a world where there are other AIs, because Claude is only one of these AIs. So how do we align both the AIs and the humans? Then we have a multi-multi alignment problem.
Another problem is that of superficial alignment. The AI may appear to behave as if it's following the rules.
Oh God, yes.
But there's this meme, which I saw in your slides, I think it's called Shoggoth, that there's an alien monster behind the large language models whose motivations we can't really discern, but it has learned to behave in ways that we humans think, hey, yeah, that's good, that's good. What do you think about that vision?
I love the question because I think it speaks to the very real power of memes. I love memes. Yeah, I was discussing this actually with my partner, who is a computer scientist, and was saying no amount of text or description of the problem could make people understand something like that. Well, Shoggoth is this tentacular monster, and the meme emphasized the risk associated with creating systems that could exceed our ability to manage or predict their behavior. So what's important is AIs are actually these alien minds that we describe as black boxes. We don't know exactly what's going on inside. We grow them, but we don't know really what they are thinking. What I really love is the Shoggoth with the smiley face that I have seen on the Twitter account of AI safety memes that is now called AI not kill everyoneism memes. Anyway, point being, they pasted on this tentacular monster this little like smiley face to say, now that we have ChatGPT with RLHF, we have this little mask to show that we have this veneer of humanness, of training, of politeness. Because actually what is under is something we do not understand, that we do not control, and that could be very harmful. It's important because, again, to the point of could there be a panic, or what is, let's say, the non-AI researcher or non-affiliated with the field opinion of large language models, where the current versions don't allow people to extrapolate what LLMs actually are, and what they see is only a veneer. It's not a good predictor of what exactly it can do.
I notice in your Utrecht slides that David mentioned, one of them refers to consciousness in AI, which is a subject close to my heart. I'm part of a startup which is going to be investigating whether conscious AI is possible and whether it's desirable. What's your hunch? Do you think machines can and indeed should be conscious?
Again, I would be too afraid to be out of my depth. I like really would refer to Yosha Bach's talk for this. Can they? Well, it's not impossible, but it's not...
not inevitable.
Something to remember is the orthogonality between intelligence and moral values and consciousness.
Do you know what Yosha concluded in his talk? Did he conclude that it was likely to happen and desirable?
I think what Yosha says is desirable is that we find a way to make it so that AI wants to coexist with us, that AI understands that human lives can have values, and that hopefully we would find a way that the AIs, the super intelligent AI, would understand the transcendental value of human life. Meaning, in short, that AI would understand how to love us, and that this may be our best hope.
And he thinks that's more likely to happen if it is also conscious the same way that we are, or not the same way that we are, but as well as we are.
I do not make predictions myself, and I would not make predictions about what people's prediction may be. I won't venture there.
Well, in that case, let me ask you about hope, because your talk was entitled Alignment, Challenges and Hope.
Yeah.
And we've found quite a few challenges in our discussion. So what are your grounds for hope? Is it just that we humans can do good things when we put our minds to it? We can share good memes that bring people out of their distractedness and make them focus on real problems? Or is there something else that underpins a hopeful vision for a better future?
Well, I love this question. It's very tied into one of the core philosophies at Foresight, which is that of existential hope. It starts with this idea that we put a lot of attention, even in sci-fi and general narratives, on the threats, the risks to humanity, and we don't often focus on what positive futures could look like and how to get there. And precisely doing that is super important because we can't really create something we cannot imagine. That's a Lucille Clifton quote, actually. You don't need concrete evidence to hope. That is the thing. The hope that I see is that there are a lot of people who are doing diligent work, a lot of very smart people who really care and are exploring diverse strategies that do understand how broad and deep the issue is, that are trying their best, that there is all these ways that we've explored and more that are being researched. Looking at it this way, the hope part, it's not naive techno-optimism. Even if there are many serious reasons to be concerned about AI, I think it's legitimate and wise even. It is a motivator. Even if we don't have a workable solution, even if we don't have a really solid plan, even if maybe we cannot grasp the implications of what we are facing, we need to look at this reality in the face soberly, continue our seeking and trying very hard at that. And I think that is actually a very rational approach.
So you've given some hope from the large numbers of smart, diverse people who are really caring about this and talking about it. But sometimes that group seems to be more of a crowd or sometimes a cacophony, speaking in different voices.
Mm.
I know you are interested in principles for changing how things are organized. You have a vision for decentralized science and decentralized communities that will allow us to tap more effectively into the distributed wisdom. Can I encourage you to speak a little bit about that? Given that, just to let the listeners know, both of us will be at an event forthcoming on decentralized science in London soon.
Yes, that is also very strongly tied with the world of Foresight. We have the traditional legacy world of science that has done really wonderful things for the world. It is a system that, with all its wisdom and with all that it has built, also has a few critiques that can be made. Like the system that propels science today is not always built on the right incentives. The financial incentives are sometimes skewing research in the wrong direction or leading it to be unproductive, or it could be optimized in better ways. There is a number of things like the reproducibility crisis that are problematic. And decentralized science is trying to address these issues by merging science and also the idea of open source science with the idea of blockchain, because blockchain can facilitate not going through third-party institutions, but more direct interaction between the parties who are trying to do something, science in this case. This is addressing all these things, trying to reinvent in that context the infrastructure of science, explore new ways of funding, trying to fund research that is underfunded precisely because of the main incentives that drive our system. And that is very much in line with what Foresight does. I often think of Foresight as a form of decentralized science institution where we have always had this tradition of accelerating underfunded research or underexplored areas that are just too novel or too exploratory for a big institutions to be willing to take on, as well as encouraging direct funding. The people who fund us are people who are very passionate, convinced about a certain field, and who will find us, and we are almost sometimes acting as matchmakers with some scientists who are exploring those ideas and perhaps struggling to find funding.
Finding better approaches to unlock funding is a theme that Callum and I often come to in these conversations.
It's hard.
I encourage people, therefore, to look up what Foresight is doing. Where can they find you online? Where can they find out more about Foresight's activities?
At foresight.org, you will find everything.
And David, what's the event that you two are speaking at?
It can be found from DESCI, that's DESCI.London. There's no .com or anything at the end of that. You can end a URL with .London these days. And it's looking at what are the possibilities to organize well-motivated, keen, thoughtful activists, entrepreneurs, and scientists without having gatekeepers unnecessarily slowing some things down.
That's right. And I will be there actually with two Foresight Institute fellows, Bogdan Oyonu-Tirstea and Dr. Roman Barr. And we'll be talking about a broad number of things, from AI existential safety to computational modeling of biological dynamics, neurotech innovation, the potential of network state and new sovereignties to accelerate AI impact technologies. It will be a fun conversation.
Final question for me. Are you a fan of the network state? Are you a fan of carving out new areas where some of the normal legislative principles don't apply?
Oh God, that is quite a rabbit hole question. I'll try to give you the shortest answer possible. I think it is extremely important today to think about better ways of coordination, about creating new layers of political governance for the world. I'm absolutely fascinated and interested by this idea. I do not think that the network state is the best approach. I think it was really interesting that this idea was brought by Balaji Srinivasan to all this tech community. The idea of the nation state system is maybe losing of its relevance today. We can see the globalization of the world and the birth of all these different ways of interconnecting that are way beyond the borders and creating these networks that were suddenly nation state, a model that makes sense. But one of my main critiques of the network state is it seems to me that it is recreating a very similar system. Its strategy being, we do not like the way things are done within nation state. Let's go create another nation state just right there. So I'm interested in approaches that are exploring other alternatives. Some of them are called coordinations, explored by Primavera de Filippi, for instance, and generally new network sovereignties, new network sovereigns. Sovereigns that are in the context of a digital world, proposing new models where we can find different governance structures for the world.
We should probably pick up some of these topics again with other guests. Maybe we can bring you back, Lou, in maybe 12 months' time to find out how you've got on with these initiatives. I want to thank you for helping us walk through a very fascinating landscape of ideas. Thank you.
Thank you so much, David, for the invitation. Thank you so much, Callum.
Thank you for joining us, Lou.